Welcome to the Raise Private Money Legally podcast with your host, corporate securities attorney Kim Lisa Taylor. Kim is a nationally recognized attorney, speaker, and the author of two number one Amazon best-selling books, the latest of which is How to Raise Capital for Real Estate Legally. Kim and her firm, Syndication Attorneys, PLLC, have been responsible for over $2.75 billion in securities offerings. The purpose of this podcast is to introduce you to topics and services you need as your real estate syndication business grows. Whether you're a new syndicator or a seasoned fund manager, this podcast is for you. Information discussed during this free podcast is of a general, educational nature and should not be construed as legal or tax advice.
Good morning. Welcome to Syndication Attorneys' free monthly teleseminar, where we talk about topics of interest to real estate syndicators, new and seasoned, with opportunity for live questions and answers at the end of the call. I am attorney Kim Lisa Taylor. Also joining me on the call is Charlene Standridge of Syndication Attorneys. So today, our topic is waiting for the techno revolution. It's already here. Our special guest for this month's program is Scott Purcell of Prime Trust. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kim. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So Scott and I have known each other for a number of years, and he was certainly one of
the early Jobs Act.
That's right. He was certainly one of the early adopters of the Jobs Act and has launched several successful companies in the wake of that. So tell us a little bit about you and your business, Scott.
Yeah, I'm a I'm a serial entrepreneur, primarily out of the securities industry. I have started a number of broker dealers. I built a trust company, sold it to Commerce Bank Group, ran trust at the bank. Also started one of the first commercial internet service providers. Raised $100 million in venture capital and built a pretty big company. So I have both securities and technology as well as banking background. And when I read about what was then the Entrepreneurs Access to Capital Act in November of 2011, working its way through the House, ultimately to become the Jobs Act in the Senate, I said, oh, wow, this could change everything. They're going to let people use the internet to raise capital for their businesses. And it's securities, banking, and technology, all the things I know. I need to do this. So I started a company called Fund America, providing B2B services to crowdfunding portals, broker dealers, large real estate syndicators, and others that were using the internet to raise money by Rule 506D, both CNB, Reg A, Reg CF, Reg S, EB5, you name it, even a big multi-billion dollar REIT that filed an S-11. So we really became a dominant provider of transaction technology, escrow technology, compliance technology, and other things in that space. In a number of years ago, we decided that we needed to better control and have more flexibility for our customers. Instead of just being a technology company, we also needed to be a financial institution. So we went through the process of working with the banking commissioner here in Nevada to form Prime Trust as a chartered regulated financial institution. And to that end, we received charter, we provided escrow services to thousands of securities offerings, predominantly real estate oriented. And a couple of years ago, people came to us and said they're tokenizing assets and wanted us to provide services to their blockchain focus. And we looked at it and we said, well, you know, we don't care whether you're issuing stock, paper certificates, stocks, bonds, or tokens at the end of an offering. The regulatory and banking mechanics are the same. There's nothing different. So sure, we're happy to support that. And that has gone on to us allowing people to, we've always allowed people via our technology, their investors, to send in money by wire, check, credit card, ACH. And we had some, in particular, one large real estate syndicator come to us and said, well, we have customers that might want to invest with Bitcoin. Can you handle that and turn it into dollars for us? And so we said, sure. And we built the technology to add that to the payment processing stack. So now it's check, ACH, wire, credit card, Bitcoin, or Ethereum that we accept.
Wow.
We now hold custody of tokens for people in a variety of different accounts. We provide services to token exchanges, to OTC trading desks. We hold assets in trust if real estate or dollars or gold or stocks and bonds or other things are being tokenized. Then we can hold that asset in trust for the benefit of the token holders. So we do a lot of different things in this space. We still do a tremendous amount of business in the traditional non-blockchain world, but we're also at the leading edge and one of the dominant financial institutions servicing the blockchain space. So that's kind of an overview of who we are and how we got here.
Yeah, well, that's there's a lot of parts to that. You guys are certainly on the leading edge of the today's technology wave, so I applaud you for that. Also, I'd like to really just kind of zero in a little bit on two topics that I think are of interest to our audience. And so you've talked about the token repository services. I think we'd just like to understand a little bit more about how people can use those services in conjunction with their securities offerings. That's one topic. And then the second one is the custodial accounts for syndicators who want to bring investors, so who have investors with offshore funds that they want to bring into the U.S. And I know you've got some services related to that. So let's start out with the tokenization of a securities offering. Can you just kind of explain to us how that would work? Because, you know, at some point there has to be some cash going to the seller. He's not going to cough up his property. So how does that all work?
Yeah, there are a number of considerations here, and there's some decisions that the issuer, or in this case, the real estate syndicator, needs to make. And that's, if you're going to go raise money for a property or a group of properties or a fund or whatever, what are you going to be giving investors? Are you going to be giving them paper stock certificates? Are you going to be giving them, you're going to be emailing them confirmations and just, you know, recording book entry on the ledgers? Or are you going to be providing them with tokens, you know, which are electronic certificates that you're going to put onto a blockchain? And if you're going to do that, why are you going to do that? So those are really the first decisions. And if you decide you want to issue electronic certificates that are on a blockchain, aka tokens, the primary reason is for liquidity, because it'll enable investors to potentially trade their tokens and get liquidity from them much easier than if they were paper or even, you know, book entry, because there are no exchanges or OTC desks for private securities issued in paper format. NASDAQ doesn't support that, but there are a lot of alternative exchanges for, you know, electronic tokenized certificates. So if you want to do that, then you're going to need to work with somebody, not us, a company like Polymath or, you know, many others out there, Harbor and, you know, T0 and Start Engine and others, who can help you create a smart contract. So, and put it onto a blockchain, usually the Ethereum blockchain under a derivative called ERC20. And I'm not going to geek out on this, because the technological stuff, you don't want to learn the technological stuff. What you want is somebody to go, hey, I want to raise money. I want my investors to have liquidity. What the heck do I do now?
Yeah, well, that's and, a big deal. I mean, that's one of the first questions that I'm sure investors are asking our clients is, you know, what if something happens and I need to get my money back, or if I want to, you know, trade out of this? And it's very difficult in a typical real estate syndication to do that, unless you're doing a, you know, single family fix and flip funds where there is some liquidity. If you're investing in commercial real estate, that money's locked up until the property's sold. So this is a game changer. But what about securities laws. So there's, obviously, if these tokens, the SEC has come down and said these token offerings are securities offerings, they're subject to 1933 Securities Act. You still have to qualify for an exemption from registration or register your offering. So we're still looking at doing a Reg D Rule 506 or maybe even a Reg A Plus offering, right?
Yep. Yeah, you're going to decide what you're going to issue investors after you've raised the capital upon successful completion of the offering, whether it's paper certificates or electronic certificates that are tokens on a blockchain, right? That's after the offering is done. So the offering itself is no different regardless of what you're going to be giving investors. You still have to work with your attorneys to create your offering memorandum, your private placement memorandum, your disclosures, your regulatory filings. You still have to create a subscription agreement that the investors are going to sign. You've got to pull together your marketing materials that you're going to be using in the offering, which of course you should run by your attorney before you use.
Yes.
And it's a traditional securities offering. It's no different. The only thing different is that when you're done with the offering and you're ready to take some money out of escrow because you're going to buy the property or you're going to commence the rehab or whatever it is the money's going to start flowing for, then you're going to issue investors something. And if you're going to issue them tokens, then you need to have created a smart contract and you've needed to basically put it on a blockchain. And there are firms, just like you're going to use syndication attorneys to help you with your offering memorandum and your subscription agreement and reviewing your marketing materials and making sure you're regulatorily compliant, you're going to use somebody like a Polymath or Start Engine or whatever to help with the tokenization and distribution of those securities to investors. And, you know, possibly even with the marketing of the deal to help you find investors if you need that. But that's, you know, a separate issue. So, you know, those are really the fundamental things. You know, we are in there, Prime Trust, we handle the escrow for the offering. We receive the customer money. We protect it until the offering minimum or contingencies are met. We handle, the KYC and the AML for those investors. We process the funds. We take care of the accounting for the offering period. We can handle the repayments post-offering of principal interest and things to all the investors. So, you know, that's our role. But our role is not necessarily helping people like create the smart contract or do the technology side of things. We do a lot of technology. We don't help people with smart contracts. That's a little bit like helping people create a offering memorandum or subscription agreement. It's not our wheelhouse.
Yeah, and you know there's always two sides to a securities offering. There's the raising money side and what do you have to do, and that's where we come in. And then there's the side of what are you doing with the money, and that's where you're going to be engaging real estate attorneys. And then you guys are kind of in the middle of that, I think.
Yeah, we're the financial institution that processes all the cash, really.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned in your blog that there had been some real estate syndicates in the last year or so, and one of them was mentioning a 260 apartment student housing project that had been tokenized, and then Indiegogo had a token offering to acquire the St. Regis Aspen Hotel. Do you know if those offerings were successful?
They were both successful. The student housing complex was done by a platform called Harbor, which is a customer of ours, and we handled all the transactions for that. And, you know, it was exciting to see these two really institutional quality deals get tokenized. Now, those were Reg D offerings, so they're not trading yet on any token exchange. They're still waiting for 144 to come off. But as soon as that happens, there's going to be a lot more ready liquidity for these in ways that the real estate industry has never seen.
Okay, so you just mentioned the next the thing I wanted to talk about in the next question. You said they're waiting for Rule 144 to come off. Tell us what that means.
Actually, that's more your wheelhouse.
I can tell you what that means. That basically means when you're selling private unregistered securities, you can't resell them for a year. So they're, you know, you're bound to keep them for at least 12 months before they can start being resold.
Right.
Is that kind of in a nutshell? You know, there's some other nuances to the law, but that's the basics that you need to know. And you'll see that anybody who's done a securities offering with us will see that in the subscription agreement and in the PPM, just that warning to investors that you're buying them for your own account, not with an intent to resell. So that's what that's about. So that's still alive and well. You still can't do it even with a tokenized offering, but then once that year is up, they can be traded.
They could apply to have them listed on an exchange. An investor that owns it could put it up on an OTC desk or an exchange. So, or the company could be proactive and reach out to people like T0 and say, hey, we'd like our securities to trade on your exchange.
Mm-hmm. And so just realize, though, that any resale of those securities that the syndicator would participate in would still be subject to securities laws and securities exemptions. So you could, if you get too active in that, you might end up having to actually do a new securities offering just for the resale. So I think that's
Let's not go into 12G and other things. You can those are one-on-one conversations you can have. In other words, this is a whole different webinar.
Right. So just realize this. They're not quite freely exchangeable, but there is some better liquidity options than you've had before with just cash. Because if people invest cash in a deal, you know, I know that there are secondary markets out there for some private offering interests, but they're usually going to be paying 50 or 60 cents on the dollar. From what the people originally paid. You know, very rarely, if the deal is a screaming deal and you can really show it's had a lot of appreciation, maybe you could get a little bit more out of it. But most of the time, people want to get out of a deal because they need the money and they need it fairly quickly. And, you know, there are people out there that are willing to profit from that. Okay, so Prime Trust's role in that whole process then was to issue the tokens and or act as a repository for them. Tell me about that.
Well, we can, you know, once the offering is completed, you know, until then we're processing the investors, we're running AML and KYC, we're, if people are investing with Bitcoin or Ethereum, we're converting that to dollars, we're, you know, doing all the blocking and tackling for so that the offering is being conducted in compliance. Once it's done, the tokens, if it's tokenized, then the tokens are going to be distributed to the investors. And typically, if you're working with a Polymath or a Start Engine or a T0 or Harbor or Coinlist or Republic or, you know, any of these other companies, they'll probably take care of the distribution for you. We can also mint them and distribute them to people's wallets. But the tokens will be given either directly to the investor if they want to hold them themselves, or they'll be put into an investor's custodial account. So, for instance, if somebody wants to invest with their IRA, then, you know, they might have a Prime Trust IRA or whatever, another IRA somewhere else. And in that case, the tokens are going to be held by the custodian, which is usually the trust company, of that IRA, or a health savings account, or an asset protection trust, or, you know, standard custodial or something like that. So there's two places that is always true with a securities offering, that the certificates, whether electronic or physical, might go. It might go directly to the investor, or they might go directly to the custodian that the investor uses.
Okay. That seems pretty straightforward. And actually, I think that you explained this better than I've heard anybody explain it before, that tokens are really just electronic certificates on a blockchain.
They are. Yep.
I think that is the simplest explanation of them I have heard to date. So I appreciate that. Okay, so let's talk about the custodial accounts. Well, maybe one more question on the tokens. Do you find that this is most attractive to non-U.S. investors, or does it seem to be a mix?
No, it's attractive to any investor who understands that historically private securities are completely illiquid. You've had some entrepreneurs try to build companies like Second Market and SharesPost, which attempted to provide some liquidity, secondary liquidity in private securities, and they just didn't work. It was just way too much friction, way too much brain damage dealing with physically issued or book entry certificates. So by tokenizing them and putting them on a blockchain, it's a whole new world of exchanges globally, not just in the U.S., like, you know, T0 or Coinbase, but globally, Binance, OKX, Huobi, Bithumb, and, you know, lots of other exchanges around the world where this can, these can trade. So investors, both domestic and global, it gives them options for liquidity that they've never had, have never existed in the private markets. And that's why my prediction is starting in 2019, everything gets tokenized. And the reason everything gets tokenized is because investors, as they learn about this and become experienced and get educated on it, rather, they're going to demand it. They're just not going to invest in offerings that aren't tokenized because there's no chance of liquidity.
Well, that's an interesting prediction. We'll have to wait and see how that pans out.
We will.
We'll do our annual review and we'll have you on again. Well, Scott, how did that prediction go for you?
It's the start of things. You know, for
it's
a real estate deal where, yeah, if you're investing in a 6-month fix and flip, then you probably don't care about your assets being tokenized because you expect you're going to get, you know, principal or interest for 6 months, and then you're going to get your principal back or whatever returns are promised. But if it's not that kind of an offering, if it's a long-term hold, then you're going to want avenues to liquidity. And what a lot of REITs have done and a lot of what real estate funds have done is they've created these convoluted methods of how an investor might get out of their shares and how they might buy them back or whatever. And this no longer is needed because they'll be able to just post on an exchange and allow people to go get liquidity that way. So it's going to make it easier both for real estate syndicators and for investors to create funds and to create projects which have long-term hold periods.
Well, I like it, and I think it's better for the investors, better for our clients, because they're not stuck with an investor that really just wants to get out, and I think it's just better all the way around. So that's a positive change that you foresee coming. All right, so let's talk quickly about custodial accounts. I've referred some clients to you in the past that were trying to bring some money in from outside the country. And tell us how somebody might do that and how a custodial account would work.
Yeah, there are different types of custodial accounts, you know, like IRAs and college savings and trusts and things like that. But the most basic level, a custodial account is just a bucket that then the custodian produces a statement for. So, for instance, if you have investments in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, you have those without question. You have those all held by a custodian. You have them at E-Trade or Schwab or Robinhood or Merrill Lynch or whatever. So those are custodians, and they hold your shares of Apple and your shares of Fidelity Mutual Funds and whatever Vanguard and whatever else. And they give you a statement once a month, probably electronically. You have to log on to your account and pull your statement up. So a custodian is really a financial services firm, a financial institution that holds your different investments and gives you a statement where you can see them all. So we do that for private securities. So just as E-Trade or Merrill Lynch does it for Apple shares and Vanguard mutual funds and things like that, we do it for people with their private securities, and they get one statement with all of their positions on it. For us, we service both domestic and international customers. We're not, a lot of people are allergic to overseas individuals and entities. We're not. So we work with a lot of people from China and Japan and Australia and New Zealand, Canada, the UK, Germany, France, all over the world. And these people typically will send in funds. They can wire us dollars, or they can wire us whatever, pounds sterling and or euros, and we'll convert them to dollars. And then we'll hold those in their account for them. They can use that account then to make investments and to receive repayments, principal, interest, rents, royalties, whatever. And it keeps their money in the U.S. and it allows them to easily work with it here. They don't have to repatriate everything. So, you know, it's custody is pretty straightforward, and Prime Trust does it for customers everywhere, both U.S. and globally.
So how does that affect clients that are bringing in investors under Regulation S, where one of the requirements is that the funds must be wired from offshore? Once they have their funds here in the custodial account in your bank, does that then kind of kick them out of Reg S? So now they have to be qualified under Rule 506 or something else?
You know, I don't have a good answer to that. That would be better answered by you and my general counsel, George. Uh-huh. We typically don't opine on things or provide legal or accounting advice. Uh-huh. So, you know, we do see a lot of Reg S offerings go through our system. But the mechanics of where the funds come from or where the subscription agreement is signed or how that works, have to defer to the attorneys.
Sure. Understand. Okay. So that's a question for us to look into. And then I think just the mechanics of the custodial accounts that that I've, you know, kind of had some involvement with you before, is that the investor sets up the account in their own name, and they can deposit whatever funds they want to deposit in it. And then if they decide that they want to disperse some of those funds, then say they wanted to invest in one of our clients' offerings, then the client would send the subscription agreement to the investor. The investor would complete it, fill it out. They would send it to you and with a direction to the custodian saying, please release, you know, $100,000 to this subscription or for this subscription. Is that right?
Yeah, basically that's right.
Okay. Okay. And then you mentioned,
keep in mind they can send any assets to us, especially globally. Some customers, some people move their funds to us not via wire, but via in the form of Bitcoin or Ethereum, which is fine. We hold those in account for them as well.
And you mentioned a little earlier that you guys do the AML and KYC. I just want to flesh that out for people that might not be familiar with those terms. The AML is the anti-money laundering due diligence, and KYC is the rule that's about know your customer. Do you do that for every depositor in a custodial account?
Yeah, in a securities offering that we're escrow agent for, we do it for every investor. For people that are opening custodial accounts with us, you know, we do it for everybody opening an account also. We're what's called a BSA subject financial institution, Bank Secrecy Act. So we are obligated to do KYC and AML and this on the investors, which is something that everybody should be doing anyhow. You know, some issuers will say, gee, you know, we don't want to pay for that. But you don't want a terrorist or a money launderer or a bad actor in your cap table, because you might just have the U.S. government coming and knocking on your door and asking them why you're aiding and abetting terrorism. It's worth the price. You know, right. What we do is not free. A lot of people go, well, we don't want to pay for that. It's like, well, you should. It's a securities offering. You may think you're just raising money for your real estate project and you're really not selling securities. You are selling securities, and you are subject to a whole host of laws. Any of them allows the U.S. government and its agencies to come down on you in ways you can't even imagine. Just do the blocking and tackling. Use an attorney. Get the offering done right. Use an escrow agent. Just do these basic things to keep yourself out of trouble.
Let's talk about the escrow accounts for a moment. So you guys offered a general securities escrow accounts?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And does that have to be in conjunction with someone hiring your affiliated companies as a broker dealer, or can you do it without?
Oh, no.
No. Okay.
No, we don't care.
Okay. So you can do a securities escrow. Can you explain, just for the benefit of the audience, how does a securities escrow account differ from them just setting up their own holding account or, you know, the property escrow account?
Yeah, there's two kinds of securities offerings when it comes to escrow. One is where there's a contingency and another where there's not. If you need to raise $1 million, picking a round number, it could be any amount. If you need to raise $1 million to buy that property, and if you raise $175,000, then you can't buy the property. Well, then your offering is going to have a contingency. In other words, it won't be considered successful unless there's $1 million in the account. So the escrow agent is required by regulation in that instance because it will protect the investors. So you can't just take somebody can't just take that $175,000. And even though the promises of the subscription agreement are not going to be met because there's not enough money to buy the property, they still took it to pay salaries and whatever else. And so the escrow agent protects investors from that happening. And if the offering doesn't succeed, then the escrow agent is responsible to send the money back to investors. By way of example, we had one offering that had 11,000 investors in it. It was a Reg A.
Wow.
And it did not meet the minimum that was required for that. And so all 11,000 investors had to be refunded. We have the technology, so basically all the issuer has to do is press a button and it just all happens. Whereas if they'd used traditional bank escrow, it would be impossible. It would take months and it would still be done wrong and there'd be lawsuits and be a big issue. So, you know, when a contingency is required, that's the escrow agent's responsibility. When there's no contingency, in other words, it doesn't matter. You could raise just $5 in an offering and you're still going to take that money as your own. Then the escrow agent is not technically required by regulation, but what using an escrow agent will do is allow you to move the money with less friction. So wire, check, ACH, Bitcoin, Ethereum, etc. It also obligates the escrow agent to perform KYC and AML so the issuer doesn't have to. So if, you know, FinCEN and its enforcement arm, which is the IRS criminal division, who you do not want knocking on your door. So the escrow agent will do these things for you to make sure the offering is conducted in compliance. And if you want to reject an investor, then it makes it easy to do because you never took the money. So you didn't countersign the agreements and you can just reject people. So it just makes the process easier throughout. But you know, the downside is it's not free, right? Whereas if you just open a bank account and have people wire money into it, it's not going to cost you anything.
Yeah, although there are times when the bank will look suspiciously at that too, depending on where the money is coming from and say, we're not going to keep accepting money in your account. Thank you.
That happens.
It does happen. Yep. That does happen. Well, yeah. And the other thing that it really adds credibility because, you know, some investors, they, especially if you're doing a 506C offering and your investors don't know you very well, you know, they're going to like to see that that money is being held by a third party until you meet. We call the contingency, we call it a minimum maximum offering, you know, where you've got to hit that minimum dollar amount before you can break impounds and use investor funds. And if you don't hit that minimum dollar amount, you give everybody's money back without deduction. So, yeah, that's going to add a lot of safety and credibility to your offering if you have that securities escrow account and some a third party is holding those funds for you. So these are all like super valuable services that our clients can immediately put to work on their offerings. And I, you know, highly recommend that you consider the custodial accounts, certainly for your non-US investors, so that they can get their money here. You're not waiting for it at the last minute when you're trying to close. You know, I had a client with a deal that completely failed because they were waiting for $3 million from a Chinese investor and they couldn't get it here fast enough. And that was really tragic because a lot of money was lost by the syndicators on getting that deal to the closing table. Okay, so anything else you think we should know, Scott?
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Okay, so Scott, tell us your contact information quickly.
Well, the best way to get a hold of us and see what we do is just to go to our website, which is primetrust.com. Super easy.
Okay, great. And then our contact information, for any of you that don't know, is syndicationattorneys.com. If you want to schedule an appointment, then you can click the button and you would actually probably speak to Charlene. So, Charlene, do we have any questions?
We do. Our first one is from Stephen Streetman.
Hey, Stephen.
Hello. This is Steve.
Hi, Steve.
I think it's great that you guys are accepting Bitcoin and Ethereum. Are you looking to accept other cryptocurrencies as well? I mean, there's thousands of them out there, and they're proliferating.
Yeah, the only ones that we want to accept are those that can be easily converted into cash, because when an investor sends something in, you need dollars. you don't need Ethereum to be wired to the title company to settle a transaction, or to pay a guy that's been hanging sheetrock all day or something like that. So for us, it's what we build into the technology. We have the ability to receive and hold Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, Stellar, any ERC-20 tokens, and a variety of other things. But as part of a transaction, of an investment transaction, we've built Bitcoin and Ethereum into that as payment method options. So if somebody wants to use Litecoin or, Stellar or something else, then they can either send that into custody, which we can convert for them, or they can just exchange it directly into Bitcoin or Ethereum and then send in that as part of the investment transaction. But it has to be highly liquid.
So a quick follow-up on that. How do you handle the price fluctuations? When they send you the Bitcoin, are you converting it to mm-hmm. cash right away, or is there a potential currency change in value? If they send in $100,000 in Bitcoin, and the next day it's going to be worth $90,000 or it's worth $110,000.
Yep.
How do you handle that?
Yep. It's a risk, and it happens both ways. Because with Bitcoin, as you know, it can take a while to settle a transaction. It's like if you send a wire by Swift from international, it can take 2 or 3 days for that wire to actually settle into the bank. It doesn't happen necessarily immediately. It can, but it also can take a little bit. If you send by Bitcoin on that blockchain, it can take 45 minutes or an hour to settle. So by the time we get it, the price may have changed already. And so in the subscription agreements, if you're going to allow people to send in Bitcoin or Ethereum, which has to be converted into dollars, you need to add language that says that the investor's final investment amount will be whatever is ultimately converted to USD, and that you're not responsible for any price fluctuations. Because you, the issuer, are not accepting Bitcoin or Ethereum. We are actually facilitating that, but you're not accepting it. You're only accepting dollars into your offering.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Charlene. Do we have any more questions?
No, those were the only questions that we've got in the queue right now.
Okay, very good. Then we'll go ahead and wrap this up. Well, Scott, this was tremendous information, and I think we really covered a lot of ground. I think this is going to be a teleseminar that's going to be heard quite a few times over the next year, and we'll be sure to pull it up next year and see if your prediction was right. I think going that way. And I know a lot of government agencies are starting to convert to blockchain for storage of just files and documents and those kinds of things. So, I think the whole world is ultimately going to get there, and we just have to pray there's never a EMP that wipes out the electric grid and then it's all worth nothing, right?
That would be bad.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us on the call today.
Hi, Kim. Thanks.
And appreciate your time on that. And thank you, listeners, for taking time out of your day to join us. And we hope you got something out of this call. And please visit our library to find other information. And if you'd like to schedule a call with us, please be sure to do so at our website at syndicationattorneys.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Raise Private Money Legally podcast with your host, securities attorney Kim Lisa Taylor. If you liked this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. Syndication Attorneys PLLC is a law firm that provides syndication and fund documents, offers commercial real estate transactional services, and creates professionally designed investor marketing materials for capital raising clients nationwide. Visit syndicationattorneys.com to schedule an appointment and sign up to get a copy of our latest book, How to Raise Capital for Real Estate Legally, the only guide you need to raise private money legally for real estate funds and syndications.